Last summer, both the City of Asheville and Buncombe County passed resolutions intended to begin making amends for generations of discrimination. The resolutions included a goal of increasing Black homeownership. 90% of homeowners in Buncombe County are white, compared with 3.9% of homeowners who are African Americans. Evanston, Illinois, another U.S. city seeking to make reparations to minorities, is implementing a reparations program involving housing grants that provide funding to those who can demonstrate that they were descendants of those impacted by redlining and other discriminatory housing policies in their city. What sort of reparations funding would you most like to see implemented in Asheville and Buncombe County? And would it apply only to descendants of Asheville residents during the eras of redlining, urban renewal, and Jim Crow, as the Evanston program does? Or would your ideal program extend to all Black residents of the city and county?
I love that you start with this question. It's something on my mind a lot and something I think is extremely important. Asheville has a real reputation, well-deserved, of cutting new trail for the nation. And I think this is an opportunity for us to do that again. I also feel like just in the journey that I've been on as a white woman to really evaluate what has been going on systematically, what I personally have benefited from in my privilege, and then how that looks from a city lens, a policy lens, is something I've spent a lot of time on. I fully support the reparations resolutions. I'm excited that we're getting to restaff the equity office and really evaluate where we're going with our minority-owned business program as well. As far as the specific aspect of the question of kind of what do I think or what would my ideal program look like, I'm going to say something that isn't directly an answer to that. And I think that's that we need to look to the Reparations Commission to tell us what they think their ideal approach is. I think that leadership's role, especially on a topic like this, and leadership from a white woman, is that my opinion's been involved in what should happen with Black Asheville for too long. People like me, you know? And so I look to see what we hear from the Reparations Commission. What I think my job on council will be to find the funding to say, okay, here's what you all want to see across the five areas they're focusing on: the criminal justice, economic development, health and wellness, and housing. But across those areas, what are the priorities? What are the strategies? And then my role will be to really double down and find the resources with my team on city council.
Great, thank you.
Our second question: Asheville's January 2022 point in time count revealed that the city's unsheltered population had doubled since the 2021 count. Between 2020 and 2022, shelter bed inventory declined from 285 to 144. Do you support the creation of more shelter spaces inside the city? And how would you respond to those homeowners, businesses, and neighborhood associations that do not want such shelter communities near their own?
I really appreciate the way this question is asked, because I think we need to ask about what we believe in and how we're going to stand up for that. I think those are important ways to ask things to ask our leadership. What would I start with? I've knocked on 850 doors at this point. So many people are concerned about the unhoused. I am concerned about the unhoused. And what I love about our town is that I hear very few voices saying, just bus them to Cape Cod. That's not a voice we hear here. We hear people understanding that a lot of people in our community are on the edge and tip end up being unhoused, and that we center the people at the heart of this. I think that starting there is a really important place and where I start. I also start with doing volunteering to make sure that my heart is engaged, not just my head, on how to solve these problems. To get to the specific question, I absolutely think we need more shelter spaces. The service providers for the unhoused have been telling us for a long time that we need more beds, that we specifically need more beds for kind of low barrier, high access, and that those need to have really extensive wraparound services. I'm excited for the Days In project, which will bring 85 more permanent supportive housing units. That's still in the works, we know, maybe 12 months at this point. So I think that'll help with some of the numbers in a big chunk. But I do think going back to really the root mark of what you were, or not the root, but one part of what you're saying is, how do we have that conversation as a community? Because as many doors I knock on that feel like we need to do something to support the housing, I think it's a natural feeling to be a little scared or nervous about having unhoused folks in your neighborhood. I understand why people can be nervous about that. And so my commitment and who I am as a leader is to really start with that human connection. Because if someone is feeling scared about the unhoused or upset about growth and development, thinking our way out of it isn't going to solve it. We need to come to a space together and go, look, your fears are real. Let's work on this. Let's talk about it together. The other thing I'd say is that to address the unhoused, we need to have coalition support. In my day job, I build coalitions of nonprofits to get them to row in the same direction on climate change. So I have the skill set of facilitation, mediation, arbitration to bring people together. And so I'm going to use those skills so that our community conversation continues to evolve in a humane and just way for our unhoused.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that.
So our third question, some residents have been supportive of the choices of the city and county to encourage employers such as Pratt and Whitney to come to Asheville and Buncombe County. Detractors argue that the necessary tax incentives are too large and that such industries are bolstering a military-industrial complex that causes deaths halfway across the world. While supporters say that the promised average wages at the new plant will exceed the county's average weekly wage of $916, and that such plants provide good jobs for locals, what would your opinion on recruiting plants for the city and the county, which would bring high-paying jobs but are involved in military work, be?
Where I start with this is just maybe to share a little bit about my experience in looking for jobs as a younger person here, right? I came to Asheville in 2002 to go to UNCA, and I got an environmental policy degree and an economics degree. As soon as I graduated, I could not wait to put that education to use in my community. And the best I could find was $8 an hour for 10 hours a week. So I moved. I left this town for the first 2 years of my career to Atlanta, and I got a job and I was able to start my career. Later in my journey, my husband, we left for his career. It is very hard to grow a career here. Have you ever heard the joke about Asheville being a BYOJ town? Bring your own job. So I'm saying this to illustrate that it's hard to do economic development and it's complex to grow industries where we can retain and build a sector so that people like my 8-year-old daughter could choose one day to live here. I also think that with this, the Pratt & Whitney plant in particular, my understanding is that the city didn't put any tax incentives into this, that it was the county. So typically in the way our governments are chartered, the city usually doesn't play in tax incentives in that way. It's usually more so the county. And in this case, it was the county. So had I been on council at the time, I wouldn't have necessarily been in a voting position. But even for the things that we care about, that the city is not directly in the crosshairs of making a decision, I think that city council needs to learn how to use their leadership voice. So for example, the city doesn't decide about pay for teachers, but I will avidly, vocally stand up for better pay for teachers. And so on council, even if the city isn't doing a lot of direct incentives for that type of economic development, I expect council folks to step up and stand up and champion the things that are right and wrong.
Thank you. In reference to something you said there, County Commissioner Amanda Edwards called for a walkout of North Carolina teachers as a part of a push for higher pay, as reported on the Asheville FM NewsHour on August 24th. She said that she thought such a walkout would be a bold step. Would you support such a call, considering that national test results released on September 1st showed in stark terms the pandemic's devastating effects on American school children? The performance of 9-year-olds in math and reading dropping to levels from 2 decades ago.
So after Amanda came out with that, I publicly came out in support and gratitude for her leadership. And it really goes back to something we were just talking about of, you know, specific responsibilities versus a voice of championing. I'm proud to say that I've been endorsed by both the Asheville City Educators Association and the Buncombe County Educators Association. I'm the daughter of a teacher who was a union organizer. I believe in the rights, and my kid goes to public school. Ruby's in third grade. So keeping the institution of public school not only alive, but thriving and healthy is very important to me. I also understand the nuances of calling for a strike, and what it takes to really perform a strike is not something done lightly. What I really value, however, from Amanda's leadership to call upon this is that it started a real conversation in this community of, gosh, hasn't it gone too far? Haven't we pushed teachers too far? Do we need to go to those real next level solutions for teachers and schools to get what they need? So I think that we are at a point where, although city council doesn't oversee a school district, city council has a voice when it comes to conversations in Raleigh, and we need to use that for all the things that are important. And to me, public schools is very, very important.
Thank you.
So the purpose of the city's Municipal Climate Action Plan is to bring together the city's 2009 Sustainability Management Plan, updated resolutions, and newly adopted resolutions around climate resiliency and climate justice into a comprehensive plan through which the city can plan for climate change. Work on the plan began last September and was originally intended to be completed by the first week of April, but a draft version, first slated for February, is not yet available. The council's planning calendar indicates that members won't vote to approve the document until at least late October, and there has been no availability of any interim documents to the public for comment. Do you believe that this work meets appropriate standards for transparency and accountability? And what do you hope that the plan, when completed, will include?
So, Emily, you might anticipate some of what I'm about to say about this question being very near and dear to my heart. So for folks listening, part of my background is that I was Asheville's first sustainability director. I actually was the first sustainability director in the Southern United States. So that sustainability management plan was created under my leadership. I guided the creation of that plan. So what we're talking about is where I've spent a lot of my time. I'm really thankful to the staff who have carried on the work of the Sustainability Office over the last 8 years since I stepped out of City Hall. And I think that I'm not really satisfied with the community engagement that we've had so far. I think that there's more work to be done to make sure that different voices are involved. I also think it's important to kind of share a little bit of the dynamic of how these plans are operating, right? So the Sustainability Management Plan or this Climate Action Plan is really to oversee the government operations. And the city partners with the Blue Horizons Project through the Green Built Alliance to pursue the community energy and climate goals. And so there are layers of this Climate Action Plan that we need more community engagement, but to some extent, what level of energy efficiency in our fire stations? I don't know that that is really a community engagement conversation. Some of that really is a technical engineered type of thing that they've been working with. So I think that there's a balance on that. But just fundamentally, the fact that over a decade later, this is the first time the Sustainability Office is going through a robust planning conversation and hasn't included the community as broadly, just really misses the opportunity to learn and gain perspective. And so I hope that they're going to open that process more. As far as what I would like to see in that plan, again, that plan is pretty much focused internally, although they have some layers about what we want to see for the community plan. What I would say for the community planning and for things that I would like to see, we have a countywide renewable energy policy where we're going to have 100% renewable energy. There are electric vehicle policies and plans in the works. I would like to see us get serious about not just setting plans, but the follow through. And this is from a woman who created our first plan. I believe in plans, but it's time for some follow through. And I think my experience in City Hall, cutting through red tape, my experience navigating my way, I built a coalition of 14 cities that took on the state legislature and Duke Energy to get rates and policy in our favor for climate change. I think that type of experience will really make sure that our plans and policies on the books turn into results.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. On August 8th, Asheville FM reported that the city of Asheville and Buncombe County filed a class action antitrust lawsuit against HCA Healthcare Incorporated, Mission Hospital, and related business entities seeking injunctive relief and damages resulting from alleged anti-competitive practices. Currently, HCA Healthcare, Novant Health, and Advent Health have applied to build 67 beds and have filed certificates of need with the Division of Health Services Regulation. Of these three entities, HCA, Novant, and Advent Health, which would you as a council member support and why?
And you probably have seen this too. I think it was just 3 or 4 days ago, a judge has validated the complaint found and basically said there are grounds that HCA has behaved in an anti-competitive manner. So I'm really thankful that the champion leadership of the city and the county to push is being validated and received by the judge. We'll see how far it can go and where it goes next. So I think that that type of leadership is powerful. And we've been talking about this almost as a theme, right? Like, we need our city council who understand their job description. And there's a bunch of stuff that the city doesn't directly oversee, but impacts all of us. We need healthcare that cares for the people. The sick and the workers are taking care of us are not getting what we need right now by HCA. And so using our voices to advocate is really important. As far as which of these three entities, not HCA. Is that too flippant of a response or too playful of a response? I think that there's a lot of very technical depth in the process to really go through this. I think that we see our state treasurer who is really stepping up to advocate against HCA. So there's a lot of process in between now and any final decisions that I'm not going to say I'm combing through all 300 pages of every brief to define an opinion on which one or the other, but expansion of HCA is directly against the benefit of our community. And on council, I'd fight to make sure that there's no expansion and hopefully that we pull away from that system.
Well, thank you.
Recently, a 19-mile section of the French Broad River in Buncombe County was declared impaired by water quality officials. In 2020, 69% of sampled sites along the river failed to meet the EPA's EcoLife standard for safe recreation. Would you feel comfortable recreating in the French Broad River? And what interventions, if any, do you think the city should be making on behalf of the river's water quality?
So this is a question, again, several of these are near and dear to my heart. As I mentioned, I went to UNCA and my undergraduate job was that I worked with the Environmental Quality Institute and with the Volunteer Water Information Network. So part of my undergrad job was tromping around in waders, collecting water samples all over Western North Carolina, and then being involved in the laboratory process to test this stuff. So shout out to those organizations who continue to track this data so we know when things are going wrong. As you mentioned, we are seeing both the French Broad and the Swanano River declared as impaired. What I think is important for us all to understand, however, is that once rivers go onto the impaired list at the state, it's not like an Endangered Species Act where it's extremely difficult to come back off of it. Rivers do go on and off all the time. So I want the feeling of doom that I hear when I'm talking with folks to share, like, this isn't a permanent bad news situation. And when rivers go on the impaired list, it opens those communities up to big pots of resources from the state. So I'm not trying to silver lining the fact that we're in a bad place, but I am trying to say there is a path away from this bad place. As far as the specific question of would I recreate in the French Broad, this is also something I want to be really clear about. The impaired rivers designation is different than unsafe for human health. So we have not tipped over into the unsafe for human health where the state says, don't touch that water ever. But it's not good for our fish. That's not good. It's not good for the water bugs. That's not good. So again, it's not like it's a good news story, but I just want to be clear too, that it's not some toxic pit. Cause I think sometimes people confuse that. So yeah, I paddleboard in the French Broad often and I enjoy it. And we spend time in the Swannanoa and we got to clean them up. That's the end of it. The beginning and the end is we have to double down, get every dollar available and really relook at our stormwater regulations in the city to make sure that the biggest, juiciest carrot incentives are in place so that when we're experiencing things that get into our river, that we're cleaning it up and tightening it up as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Asheville's tourism director, Vic Isley, said on August 31 that hotel bookings have been down for three straight months, May, June, and July. Just a few years ago, hotels were 100% booked during this time. She also says that the trend is expected to continue through the fall. This fall in bookings occurred in the face of a 2021-2022 Buncombe County TDA board budget in which $15.3 million was designated for advertising and public relations expenditures, including $1.3 million paid for Asheville advertisements during the 2022 U.S. Open tournament in New York City. Given the decline in bookings, would you say that the TDA expenditures were a good use of public funds? And would you suggest continuing expenditures at that level during your tenure on the city council?
No, I don't think those were a good use of money. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but sometimes in order to keep doing good work, we need to find some levity and we need to keep hope. So, where I start with this is just to remind the public that the city doesn't oversee the TDA or the TDA budget. So that's not to avoid the responsibility, but there's a lot of confusing information out there. It's hard to know all the things. And so I just want to make sure that since we have a platform and ear, if you will, of many neighbors right now, it's not under the city's direct jurisdiction. The city did recently in the last year lobby the state, who decides how the TDA can spend money, to change what percentage goes back into our community and what percentage goes to advertising. I do not think that change goes far enough. I'm thankful that we made progress and that more money goes into our community. I appreciate our Senator Julie Mayfield, who fought to make that happen, our current council who lobbied to make that happen. Great progress. We need to go further. We are not getting our fair share for our infrastructure and for our needs. And we need to make sure that we keep pushing. What I also think we need to think about is we need people on city council who understand the nuances of these relationships and can build support towards Raleigh. Because as many of us know, I'm sure both of you know as journalists, there's so many things that Raleigh decides on city's behalf in North Carolina. So if we have council folks who don't understand how to work their way towards Raleigh, how to show up at those tables in a state legislature that isn't really fond of Asheville, that those are the type of skills that I've already worked on in my career. I've built those coalitions to have conversations in Raleigh. I've made progress in Raleigh and I want to do that again.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, and this is our last question. High density housing is a primary goal of the city as detailed in its comprehensive plan and adopted by city council. Neighborhood associations and local homeowners have spoken out against previous urban development plans, like recent changes to the city's zoning laws, in favor of maintaining city character, green space, and property values. Do you support high density housing development? And how would you respond to community members' accompanying concerns?
I'm thrilled that we're having this conversation and asking this question. The number one thing I hear that folks want city council to focus on is housing affordability, hands down, by far the biggest concern. And it's a concern to me. I have family members who are looking to shift from their full-time home. They're ready to get kind of some assisted care. We're not sure that they're going to be able to stay in this town. It's very personal. And so as you mentioned, we do have these goals in our comprehensive plan and we need to be working towards those. The other thing I want to talk about first, though, is what is the context? We have a housing shortage in Asheville. We need 4,000 more units to meet demand. We have less than 1% open rates or availability. There simply are not enough homes for all of the people who want Ash to be here. And if we don't get more affordable units that are close to jobs, that are close to resources, what will continue to happen is the highest bidder gets the chance to stay in our town. I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with our people earning the lower incomes, having to move further and further and further away, having to drive further, having to spend more money on gas, contribute to climate change by being further and further away, and only people of a certain income bracket get to stay in our city. So we need to remember that when we talk about what it looks like to where new places are being built. We need all kinds of housing for all kinds of people. And sometimes that means to have a granny apartment in your backyard instead of just a lawn that you mow. And sometimes it means looking for this missing middle concept where we have more duplexes and quads and 8 units tucked into neighborhoods. I want to see more of that in our community because I'm not comfortable with a community that is driven on economic lines where it's only a place for some, and it's getting to be that way. So we need to really support the comprehensive plan's implementation.